Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants. This is Torture Cast.
Welcome, everybody, to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. My name is Willie Dills. This is episode number 79, eloquently titled, Football is Over. Because football is over, and it's time to start thinking about baseball again. Now, I've been thinking about baseball for a long time, but, you know, everyone thinks about football while the football season's going. It's kind of annoying, to be quite honest. I like football. Football's great. Super Bowl just ended. We'll talk about that. But first, I want to introduce my co-hosts, my good friends. First of all, we're going to introduce Mr. Chad King. Welcome back to the show. Chad, what's up, dude?
Happy New Year. And hey, look, we all want to be Tom Brady or Russell Wilson, but I strive to be the left shark. Just going to leave it there.
I think everybody does, honestly, because you get a good look at Katy Perry's backside. It's nice to see.
Yeah, that's definitely
one man who may not care about Katy Perry's backside, Mr. Eric Nathanson. What's up, dude? How you been, man?
I'm doing well. Good to hear you guys again.
It's good to have you back on the show. Like, it's been so long since we talked. The last time all three of us were together was actually the kind of 2014 consolidation show. We talked about the entire season. We talked about the world champion Giants. The whole run through the playoffs, the fallout of that, everything that happened, you know, all of that. We talked about the parade. We talked about so many things. That was an epic episode, I must say. I listened back to it. I don't know if you guys listened back to that episode, but that thing
I just did last week, actually, by the way.
That was a beast of an episode.
Yeah, we had a couple of listeners tweet at us over the last couple of weeks saying that, oh, on my four-hour road trip, I listened to the championship episode. You know, I'm studying for finals. I listened to your championship episode. So, it just reminded me of that. I did go back and actually listen to it. It was fun. I know it was long, but it was fun.
I had a blast. I listened back, and I remembered how much fun I was having as I listened to it. Because
oh, yeah, totally. You relived it.
To me, what we did in that episode is kind of like when you get together with some good buddies of yours who you know are fans of the Giants, and you get together at like a bar or something, right? And you just order cocktails, but not just like a few. You get like shots. You get like IRA car bombs. You're just like, ah, we're talking Giants all
night. You don't do that in a half an hour.
You know, this is an all-night thing. We showed up at 7:30 and we left at 2 a.m.
That's right.
Wives were pissed. And, you know, and we had it out and we talked about the Giants. And that's what that episode was to me. It was so fun. And I listened back to it and I kind of reveled in that again. And now it's been a while since we've been back. You guys have done an episode since I haven't been back in a while. You guys did an episode since, and that episode was also really good. I listened to that as well. But now it's time to start. There's actually news now. It's time to start talking about the new season, the coming up season. We're champs. We're still champs. That can't be taken away. That's fantastic. It's great. But inevitably with sports, another season must come. So now it's time to start looking forward to 2015 and what's going on with the Giants. So that's what we're going to do today. And there's actually news. It's not great news. I don't know. Maybe it's great news. I don't know. It's news. It's something.
It's a lukewarm bath, pretty much.
I think the Giants fans as a collective have been waiting for something, something big. Something big hasn't really happened. Like personally, as somebody who's been following this team for a long time, feel that in the past, you know, like there was time, like when Barry Bonds got signed, right? That was like, this team needs something big, right? That's when we needed something big. 92 to 93, we need something big, man. When you win, I don't think we need something big. I think people want something big. But I think what Sabian has done over, you know, the time that he's been the guy, I kind of believe in this dude at this point, right? And so if he doesn't pull the trigger on something big, there's got to be a good reason for it. We're going to talk about all of that, and we're going to talk about what we've brought in and all of this. But first, let's talk about the Super Bowl. Let's just start there, because this is – we'll clear the air. We'll get the Super Bowl out of the way. And I know, Eric, you're not just the fan of the Giants. You're just a sports fan. Chat, you're a fan of the 49ers like me. Mm-hmm. First, Eric, what is your – did you have allegiance to either team? Do you care about either of these teams?
I kind of did and I kind of didn't. As a Bears fan, there's really no, you know, clear cut.
Bears fan. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
So there was no clear cut anything. But I was rooting for the Seahawks, and I've been on their bandwagon for a couple years ever since Wilson tore the Bears apart at Soldier Field. And I kind of went, whoa, this is something else. And I'll admit, I was rooting for the Seahawks. I don't have as much vitriol as you guys do. My team was vanquished 2 weeks earlier, the Packers, so I didn't have to get that angst anymore. But I rooted for Seattle. I wasn't crushed when they lost because in the grand scheme, I really didn't care.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted a good football game. I mean, as we watched Tom Brady go down the field on that last drive of his, you know, I couldn't help but utter a few different times, wow, this is a hell of a drive. Wow, this is something else. I mean, the guy was like 12 for 14 or 13 for 15 or something in the fourth quarter. And so it was great to see good football.
I'll put this out there. Chad, I'm going to get to you as well, because I know you probably have some things to say. But as a 49ers fan growing up, and I'm not a big football guy. I'm not a huge football guy at all. I enjoy football. I'll say that. I enjoy it. I think it's super fun to watch. Super fun to watch football. Tom Brady kind of eclipsing Joe Montana is a little bit of a concern.
Yeah.
As a 49ers fan, where you're like, oh man, but Joe Montana was still the best. But now maybe is he still the best? I don't know. You know, but to me, like, that might have been the only reason to root for Seattle, right? Is just Joe Montana's legacy. That's the only reason that I could find to root for Seattle. Every other bone in my body said, fuck you, Seattle. Fuck you, Seahawks. Stop crossing your goddamn arms every time you sack somebody or tackle somebody or score a touchdown or pretend to poop on a football or do all the stupid things you guys are doing. You cocky little bastards, why are you so full of yourselves? Like, that's the other part of me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that part of me was stronger. Montana's legacy gave way to my anger over watching Seattle be what Seattle is right now. Yeah. So I rooted against Seattle at that point because as the game went on, when Seattle was winning, the cockiness was apparent. The way they act was apparent. We all remember Navarro Bowman. His leg gets broken. He's getting carted off the field. Seattle fans are throwing popcorn at him. We remember this stuff, you know. You remember Sherman intercepting essentially a touchdown pass, intercepting it, and then running over to Kaepernick to very politely, I'm sure, say, hey, man, great game, right after he intercepted that pass, right? That was, I'm sure what he meant was very politely and very genuinely that you had a great game.
Yeah. Sherman and Wilson, eating at, midfield at mm-hmm. Levi Stadium. You know, things mm-hmm. like that. Yeah, it's
sure. Yeah, no, these guys, they're great sportsmen, dude. They just love the sports, and they're just No cockiness to these guys at all, but watching them do it, I just hated them more and more as it went on. And when Wilson threw it an interception with, you know, whatever, 30 seconds left.
20.
20 seconds left on the goal line when you have the best running back in football. Which, by the way, I have things to say about that as well. But, but, you know, when he threw that interception, I do admit, it moved. It moved a little bit. And I was kind of happy. I came into the Super Bowl not caring who won. By the end of the Super Bowl, I was happy that the Patriots won.
You know, I kind of went through the same thing as you, Willie. I mean, in fact, this Super Bowl I pictured from the beginning as the worst possible Super Bowl for me personally, other than maybe the Raiders being in there. But the Raiders haven't been successful lately, so yeah. I didn't really care, right?
What about the Broncos or something? Like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if the Broncos had made it, whatever. It was tough because I had the same issue as you, being a 49er fan. You know, we've always esteemed the 5-0 record, and that was sullied 2 years ago.
Yeah, we lost that.
When
yeah.
Cap couldn't.
We never lost the Super Bowl. Now we lost.
When Cap couldn't get that pass back in the end zone. 5-1 now. You know, Montana's got four Super Bowl rings.
Why don't you get Gore the ball and just run the ball?
Yeah, it is very similar to the end of this game, although this game was much worse, I'd say, because obviously it wasn't the 5-yard line, it was the 1-yard line.
It was.
I mean, you know, it's
but
from the 5-yard line.
I'll refute that in a second, but yeah.
Okay. But it was really the cockiness of Seattle. In fact, Russell Wilson, I actually totally admire. I think that guy is nails. He is very cogent. He doesn't have a big ego. He's not like Sherman, you know, or Beast Mode, or, you know, Pete Carroll always chewing his gum, you know, getting away with crimes at USC. He kind of is separate from the rest of Seattle. I actually kind of admire the guy. But
I respect that guy. Yeah. That guy's like built himself out of nowhere to be one of the premier quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah.
He's the reason I started liking Seattle, not for all this other fluff crap you were talking about. It's because of Wilson.
Oh, the fluff crap. Yeah. No, this stuff matters, dude. These other people are dicks. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not disputing that. I wasn't saying it was fluff coming from you. It's just all this extraneous crap.
I kind of went into the game same way you were. It was like, well, I think I want the Patriots to win, but I'm not really sure. And it really took the game, the way it unfolded, for me to actually feel my emotions kind of pointed me in the right direction. It was one of the few games where, you know, some Super Bowls I literally don't give a shit. This one was, well, I sort
of when it's like the Pittsburgh whatever's against the
It's right? I literally don't care.
All right, I don't care.
Yeah. Like this one, it's like, well, this one's like, I don't know. I hate
both these teams.
Yeah, I hate both teams, but I don't know who it took really getting into the third and fourth quarter to finally kind of go, yeah, I feel myself pulling for New England right now because I cannot stand Seattle winning back to back. I can't. And, you know, with a third Super Bowl potentially in a row, being at Levi's and the 12th man attitude and just all those things. I know it's a little, what is the term I'm looking for? Schadenfreude, you know, the German term of like you enjoy watching the failure of others. And that's exactly what I felt at the end of that game. Because once New England scored, I was like, all right, here we go. I was like, well, they got 2 minutes left and we know what they did against Green Bay. And sure enough, it took that goddamn circus catch by Kurse. And everybody was talking
about it. That catch was retarded.
It was just totally retarded.
It was a circus catch. That was just the ball luckily bounced back to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it took skill to catch it, but it also took luck for the ball to be in that area. So it was a little bit of both, but it was kind of like, the catch with the Giants against the helmet and all these other things. And all these Patriot fans were talking about, oh, my God, we're going to get cursed again. And ironic that the guy who caught it, his name is Kurse. Right? And they were talking about that. And then you get the 4-yard run down to the 1-yard line, and everybody in the stadium is going, Oh my God, second down. And they let the clock run, by the way. There was still 50 seconds left after the first down play.
There was a minute three. It was a minute three.
The Patriots did not call a timeout.
That was actually on purpose.
Yeah, exactly. And so Seattle just let it run all the way down to 20 seconds. Well, a little more than 20 seconds when they snapped the ball. But they were trying to run the clock out so they didn't allow New England with any time left if they should score right away. But it was just funny how it worked out because, of course, you know, the slant, the guy made a fantastic pass. In fact, I was watching NFL Insider today, and there was 110 or 115 passes, including the postseason, where there were passes from the one-yard line or inside of the one-yard line. So basically the one-yard line. 66 were caught for touchdowns. So you're thinking, okay, it's about 65% are touchdowns. 30-whatever were incompletes. Only one interception, and it was the one last night. So It is a low interception percentage chance, but at the same time, it's like the percentage of beast mode running it in from 1 yard are so much greater than the 66%. I just like everybody else, I found it astounding. So I saw a couple of people today that were actually defending Pete Carroll's call, and the way this is their logic.
I'll defend it too. Go first.
So, and I'm not saying that they're wrong, but I don't agree with it because, of course, it's just opinion. Because New England did not call that timeout, Seattle ran it all the way down to whatever, 25 seconds before they snapped the ball. So these guys were saying, look, second down, if you run it and you don't get in, you have to call a timeout. Because the clock's going to continue to run, and you're now under 20 seconds. Well, now it's third down, and you don't have any timeouts left, and you have whatever, you know, 13, 15, 18 seconds left on the clock. The chances of you running it on third down, not making it, being able to reset to then call a play to then either pass or run on fourth down before the clock expires are very slim. So their argument was that out of those last three plays, you had to pass it at least one time. Seattle chose to pass it on second down because of the goal line package that New England had in. Now, I understand statistically maybe they are correct on that, but at the same time, they let the clock run down to that point. So they could have easily run that play a lot sooner to give them the three full running plays or cracks at the end zone, as opposed to saying, oh, we're down to 20 seconds. Now we have to throw one play. Let's do it on second down to, quote, surprise them because their package is in to defend the run. So to me, it didn't make any sense, but whatever.
All right. So, yes, what you're saying is totally clear. The thing is that Seattle didn't put in their run package, right? They made that one run, but that was kind of from like a, you know, pass package or whatever you want to say, whatever you want to call it. When New England didn't call the timeout, they expected them to call a timeout. And then they went into scramble mode, and they're like, okay, well, now we have to call a play real quick. And when you're a coach and you're a coach in the NFL, and you suddenly have to make a decision that you weren't ready to make, I'm sorry, like they just made that decision. That's and like everyone's like on their case, like they did something like totally fucking crazy and so bad. God, this is so bad. How did they do this? Like, no, that on the fly as a coach, these are the decisions that get made. This is how it works, you know? So I'm sorry, like them calling that pass play there was actually correct in that circumstance. What was incorrect was the fact that Russell Wilson decided to force a pass into a situation that he shouldn't have forced a pass into. I think that was the problem.
Yeah, because it boils down to the type of pass play that they called. Had they done a little dance and maybe play action passed, had Russell Wilson roll out and thrown either a fade or something like that, that wouldn't have given him the option to throw it away. Exactly. By calling a quick slant like that, they never gave him the option to throw the ball away.
Sure. So yeah. But again, though, what they were thinking was do something that takes very little time off the clock. Do something quick, and let's trust Wilson. Because Wilson is known as the guy who doesn't throw interceptions, right? Throws it away when I should throw it away. That's what Wilson is, isn't he?
Like, pretty much.
So essentially what happened was Wilson made a bad call, and now the coaches are taking the fall for it. That's what's happening right now. And it's not that, you know, it's not that it's anyone's fault necessarily. It's just a bunch of people's fault, and everyone's trying to figure out who the fall guy is. But guess what? A bunch of things went wrong, and actually, Belichick needs to get some credit for not doing the snap thing that everyone thinks he should do, which is call a timeout. He realized, like, I have my team on the field that I want in a goal line situation. They don't. Don't call timeout now, because now they have to, like, quickly run their guys off and on the field to get to this point where they can run beast mode. You know, everyone's like, oh, what the fuck, beast mode? Beast mode, man! God, just beast mode! It's like, okay, you're fucking rabid football fans. You don't understand actual football tactics. All you understand is that he's beast mode. That's all you understand.
Feed the beast.
You understand that I'm going to fucking hook up a bunch of beers and make a bunch of brats, and we're going to watch a football game, and beast mode can always get 1 yard. I'm sorry. Do you work for the New England Patriots or the Seattle Seahawks? Have you played a bunch of games and watched a bunch of practices and been a part of all of that and understand, like, the mind games that go on between the two teams? No. This is like when people bitch and moan at, like, Brian Sabian or Bruce Bochy for, why did you put this guy in at this point? Mm-hmm. Why is Buster Posey still catching after this? Like, Buster Posey went 0 for 4 last night. Pull him. Pull him. Put in anybody else. Really? Have you watched any of these games? Like, that, I can't believe, like, the audacity of people that they don't understand this. Everyone thinks they understand football more than Belichick. Like, oh, he didn't call a timeout because he screwed up. No, that was on purpose. Pete Carroll threw, like, did a passing play because he didn't understand that he had beast mode. No, he knows that he has beast mode.
Yeah, no,
he knows. Just... they all know. Everyone knows. They all made the correct calls in the correct situation, and the players decided the game, not the coaches. The players decided the game. That kid, that rookie kid for the Pats, made an unbelievable play to move on that ball that quickly. And not only move on that ball, he could have just broken it up, but he caught it.
Yep.
And then he ran forward and got out of the end zone in a split second. That all happened in a split second. That kid was crying after the game because of how amazing that was for him.
Yeah, he was an undrafted
free agent.
To
have actually pulled that off. Yeah.
He wasn't even on the team until, like, December, and that was his first.
But that kid is still a world class athlete, making a world class play.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
No,
and so
he read it correctly.
Everybody who thinks that they know doesn't know anything. There's a bunch of people, forum jockeys, fat dudes sitting on their fat, talking about how they know what to do. You guys don't know what to do. If Look. You had 30 seconds to decide every time what to do,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, you wouldn't know what to do at 99, all.
99, like, obviously the stats bear it out. More than 99% of the time, it will not be an interception.
Exactly.
So it took literally the worst possible outcome. I mean, just the worst luck and the best play the opposition could make to do that.
Exactly.
And there are arguments to be made because – can Marshawn Lynch fumble a ball? Well, of course he can.
Absolutely,
the chances are low. just as low as the pass. Obviously,
or he could get stuffed. He could get stuffed, and then suddenly it's like now we have to call a timeout.
Right,
and then now we only have two plays and no timeouts.
And do you pass or run on third down?
And now do we pass or run?
Yeah.
All of those things could happen. The fact that this happened doesn't mean that what all these people did was absolutely the wrong thing. You can't – like this is results-oriented mm-hmm. thinking, and mm-hmm. everybody always has results-oriented thinking. It's like I put Tim Lincecum in. He's never been in as a closer. I put him in, and he shut him down. Bruce Bochy is the most genius manager of all time because in 2012, we moved Lincecum to the bullpen, and he shut it down, right? So Bruce Bochy must be the most amazing manager of all time, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, look, Pete Carroll, I think, took an unorthodox call. I think 99 times out of 100, coaches who had, you know, who were coaching the Seattle Seahawks with Marshawn Lynch in the backfield would have called for the run. He called for something different because he saw something else. He said,
"For because of Marshawn Lynch." This is what I'm saying.
No. What I'm saying is that he saw
the package that was on the field.
He saw the package that was on the field, and he said, "That's not good for the run. So let's do the pass." Now it is similar, I would say. Even though the result was horrible, and Seahawk fans are all over Pete Carroll right now, to, let's say, Bruce Bochy keeping with Madison Bumgarner in the eighth and definitely the ninth inning. Because if you had other managers like Matt Williams, you know, who took out what's-his-face, you know, in the ninth inning with two outs. It's those kinds of things where he read the situation. He did not read the book.
Chad, right. You're on it right now. Okay. Bruce Bochy stays with Madison Bumgarner in game seven after Madison Bumgarner has thrown 270 innings, right, over a season. Now we're going to ask him to come out of the bullpen in the fifth inning and throw five innings, right? He comes out in the ninth inning, right? This dude hits a ball. It should be an out. Maybe it's a single. Should just be a single, goes past the left fielder, goes to the wall, guy from first scores, ties the game, next guy hits a home run, wins the game. Bruce Bochy's the GOAT, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why did you leave Madison out there? Why didn't you put in your
club? You had Casilla in.
Right?
He was warmed up. He only had four pitches the entire World Series.
But guess what happens? The next guy pops up, Pablo catches it. Giants win the World Series. Bruce Bochy's a genius.
Right. You know, Russell Wilson hits that slant. Either it's a touchdown and he's a genius. It's an incomplete and they're still alive.
It's an incomplete. They move in their goal line offense, give the next play. Beast mode scores. He's a genius. You threw that play. You stop the clock. He's a genius, right? But because it's an interception, because Russell Wilson actually – kind of fucked up, or not even that, but because the guy on New England made an incredible play.
Yeah, no, I give credit. It's
like totally lost in the shuffle.
Mm-hmm,
that guy just made an incredible play. Now it's all because like this guy screwed up. No, the players on the field decide it. Those guys make the decision that they think gives the best chance to their team, and we talk about this all the time on the podcast. Bruce Bochy can only do so much. Bruce Bochy can only put in the best guys he thinks can do the best job on the field. The rest is up to them. Buster Posey gets left in all the games, right? And he's hitting terribly throughout the – he looks tired. But you know what? He's still the best guy to catch. He's still the best guy to lead the team. You don't take him out. Like all of this leads back. I'm sorry. I'm bringing it back. Bringing it back to the Giants, right? Eric, I think you get this. Like, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
All of this comes back. There's not a correct or incorrect way to coach a team. You just do the best you can with the players you have, and the players decide the outcome. So for everyone to sit there and talk about how this guy made the correct or incorrect call is all kind of – that's just conjecture. We're all just We're just talking out of our asses.
Yeah, I mean,
figure it out.
Look, my stance has been tempered. Last night I was screaming, I cannot believe you would make that call. I still am on that side of the fence. I still think that they should have given it to Lynch, but
you have to call a timeout to do that.
Given 24 hours, I've been able to kind of reflect on it and say, well, okay, I get it. It wasn't the worst call ever. But I still don't agree with it.
Dude, if you're going to run the ball, you're going to run the ball with the incorrect team on the field? No. You got to bring in the fullback. You got to bring in the extra tight end. You got to do that.
Yeah, they just weren't prepared.
They weren't prepared.
No, they weren't.
You have to do that really quickly. If they had like immediately been like, okay, shuffle people in, shuffle people out. Let's do this. Sure. But football is not like baseball. Like, decisions have to be made. A clock is ticking.
Yep. They ain't That's no conversation on the pitcher's mound.
All right. New conversation. Eric, football sucks, right? Because of that? Like, how is that supposed to be the way that, like, you decide?
Yeah, that's what's so beautiful.
Sports event.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny. You brought it back to Bochy, and you look at him, and, like, I wrote a glowing piece about him being a Hall of Fame manager. But if those things didn't bear the results that he did, then we wouldn't be talking about him such a way. Hell, we might not still be on a podcast if they didn't keep going like they did. You know what I mean? Who knows what happens if Bochy's decisions don't pan out? You know, there's such a ripple effect. But you have to look at if you put your team in the best position to win. And the coach or manager that does that over the long term is the one that should have the results bear that out. Yeah. Which is why, like, the example of Bruce Bochy absolutely lit Matt Williams up in that NLDS, you know, because there's no way he would have made the same moves that Williams made. And that goes to show that the same kind of thing. You say the players decide it, and that's the truth. But, you know, that's what makes baseball so beautiful is you can think six steps ahead. You can't always do that in football because you have to immediately react to what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a clock ticking, man. There's 40 seconds on that clock. Yeah.
Right.
They're not thinking a 45-yard pass, circus catch down on the sideline. I mean, that was like, what? Oh, on their 5-yard line? Okay, let's go.
Well, yeah, but then they all had to run up to the line of scrimmage, and they burned a timeout before the Lynch 4-yard run.
They were confused. Exactly. They were
right.
Guys were moving in the backfield. Finally, Wilson stood up and just called the timeout. And that was a huge play right there. I agree with you, because if they could have run a play, they would have had two timeouts for the next sequence of plays, but they had to burn one right there because they didn't know what the hell they were going to do.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's not something you'd see in baseball, you know. If the catcher and pitcher aren't on the same page, then, you know, Buster will go out there and say, "What the hell's wrong with you? I put down one finger," you know? It's totally, totally different.
Yeah. So it's you know, I think we're all in agreement that this was quite a Super Bowl and quite an interesting ending.
Yeah, it was a good game.
It was fun for everyone to watch, but we're all ready for baseball again, right?
Damn right.
I'm ready for baseball, man.
And another thing, I know you're out there in Florida, Eric, but damn it, Willie, you and I have been having some just incredible weather here in the Bay Area with this drought.
Yeah.
The month of January, we had zero rain. We've had temperatures in the 70s almost, you know, most of the month. I mean, it feels like April or May in January. So, I mean, I've gotten the itch to play baseball. In fact, yesterday I played a flag football game, our annual flag football game before the Super Bowl. And at halftime, I brought my glove and a baseball and was catching with a friend of mine. It's the first time I'd thrown in a while. And it was just like, damn it, I really want baseball to start now. You know, it's still another, you know, what, 3 weeks till catchers and pitchers report, or 2 weeks or something like that. But
it's actually really close. It's like 11 days or something.
Yeah, February 18th. There you go.
But it's like baseball's back, but it's not really back just yet.
It's back enough. It's back enough. You know?
It gives us plenty to talk about.
Yeah.
Gives us absolutely so much more to talk about now, finally.
Yeah. So let's talk about baseball. Because now, football, cool. That shit's over. Baseball is back. TorchCast is back. It's time to talk about baseball. Giants made some moves. A lot of people expected big moves out of the Giants this year. We didn't make big moves. I would not classify these as big moves. However, there were some moves. Moves were made, right? We lost Pablo. Have we done a show since Pablo left?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. we did that one, and everything that we speculated on didn't happen.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, Chad, why don't you give the people what did happen? What did happen?
Well, you know, what's come out recently is that we assumed, we had heard that Pablo accepted whatever, 5 years, 95 from Boston, and that San Francisco had matched that with an option 6 year. Well, as of last week, what actually came out in an interview is he accepted Boston's offer and didn't even allow San Francisco to extend a further offer, which actually was more than $95 million. Because he didn't even want to consider it. He was set on Boston. So that, you know, it's a bit of an interesting tale there. It doesn't mean he hates the Giants. Maybe he wanted that new challenge, as he said, you know, he wanted. But again,
he wanted the new, quote-unquote, new challenge.
Right, But it goes back to...
I think it's bullshit, but...
Yeah, he wants to be the man. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, we talked last episode
about,
you know...
Yeah, Posey and Tim Lincecum and whatever. But you know what, though? I think that's super bullshit because he was the man.
Yeah.
He was the man. Like,
well, I think he's taking a big risk because he could absolutely flourish in Boston. He absolutely could flourish in Boston and be, you know, the poppy number two. But at the same time, if he fails, hey, look, he started what? The first 2 months of last year hitting 180. Was he being booed? No.
No.
No Hell one in no. San Francisco was booing him. Everybody was like, "It's okay, Pablo. You know, we love you. It's all good. You'll be all right." And as it turned out, he was all right and became another World Series hero.
If he struggles, he's going to regret this decision for the rest of his life.
And Kruko nailed it, I think, because even though Kruko is a homer, of course, we all know that, he does know Pablo pretty well. And he said, "Look, Pablo is infectious. He's an amazing person. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He's a great personality. He is a great influence in the clubhouse. But he needs to be loved. And if he's not loved, he doesn't perform well." So he is actually concerned, kind of like as a friend, that if Pablo doesn't get off to a good start in Boston, he's going to get booed. And that in turn will just cause Pablo to collapse. So it's going to be interesting to see what might happen there in Boston. I mean, clearly he could, you know, hit 350 and 20 bombs and he's going to be fine. But at the same time, if he does struggle, Boston is going to let him know. And it'll be interesting to see how he reacts to that and how he handles that pressure.
I really hope that that's not the case because, you know, I just don't want it to be, honestly.
You want good things to happen for us.
I want Pablo to succeed. I love the guy, but here's the thing. It's like this is why we didn't want him to leave in the first guy.
Well, you and I were so adamant in the preseason, you know, episode.
We're fans,
back
man.
In April.
We're fans.
You and I were the only ones just absolutely, you need to lock this guy up right now. And, you know, Jen and Ben and I'm sorry, forgetting her face.
Shalana. Yeah.
Shalana. No, we're all like, get rid of him.
Yeah, get him out of here.
And well, of course, as it turns out, San Francisco actually offered him more money than Boston. So it's like in the end, San Francisco did value him just as much as you and I did a year ago. And it's just very frustrating. But hey, look, at the same time, they did free up that money, which was a ton. And they've kind of redistributed it across the club. It's not sexy.
It's been very, it's been very measured, I guess.
Underwhelming.
Underwhelming is a good term. And it's funny because I haven't run the numbers, but when I've read like Tim Kawakami and all these other guys, they're saying that the payroll is actually higher this year than in 2014. It's just hard to, like, without looking at the numbers, to understand how that's possible with losing the players that they have and re-signing the cheap ones that they have. Like, how are they actually – have they gone up in salary? That doesn't make sense.
We lose these guys, and yet we go up in salary. And so it's like, why didn't we keep these guys and stay at whatever salary or still go up or whatever? But, like – the Giants, when you look at the numbers, the Giants make more money than like almost anybody in baseball.
Yeah.
They're a very profitable team. And people pay a lot of money to come see them. People pay a lot of money on their merch. losing Pablo's a big deal, man. There's not going to be Casey McGee. He is not going to sell as many hats as Pablo.
No, he's not.
Sorry.
Unless he does something endearing.
Yeah. But the fact is, Pablo wanted to go. Pablo wanted to go. And I guarantee you that Pablo didn't want to go because he hated the fans here or because he's an asshole or because whatever. Pablo had this thing in his head that I need a new challenge in my life.
Yeah. Right?
That somehow he's going to look back on all this and be like, I conquered all these challenges. That's what he's going to look back on. It's like, I think his brother like pumped him up. I think a lot of people in his life pumped him up. You're this amazing player, Pablo. You need to like mount all these challenges and surpass them. Not, you know, some players look at like, I want to stay with the same team forever and cement my legacy in a place.
Well, it was Pablo's unfortunate because
again, people around him didn't feed him that story.
No, because Pablo said during the parade that he wanted to retire a Giant, and apparently that wasn't sincere. Yeah, if it was, he would have stayed. Because
well, that's getting caught up in the moment. It's the old adage: don't make promises when you're happy.
Yeah,
and don't make make decisions when you're mad. It's totally that old adage.
A lot of people want to stay in the town that they get a championship with the moment they get the championship in that town. Yep.
And then after it fades a little bit, they're like, hey, maybe I want to change.
Brother hits you up and tells you about how amazing you are. You're the best third baseman in baseball. Mm-hmm. I don't know. His brother kind of pisses me off, man.
Yeah, Poppy worked him too.
I don't know if you guys get that feeling, but.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he seemed like a real big influence. It started during the season, too, that he was a big influence last year.
He's like glommed on to Pablo. It's like, I'm your man, dude. I got your back. But I. Are you looking out for Pablo or are you looking out for you? I don't know. It kind of feels like he's looking out for himself, not Pablo.
Well, we got Casey McGahee coming in. Obviously, he's getting paid much less than Pablo, but
this guy's good, dude.
He's not bad.
Good, actually.
So he actually hit 11 points higher.
About Casey McGahee, but this guy's a solid player.
Well,
and this,
you know, they're talking about
anybody. Like, who else would it be? Who else would be better than Casey McGahee?
No one else that was on the market. Other than
unless they could have landed Prado, unless they could have landed Prado from
Prado,
the same team.
Sure.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen Martin Prado.
Yeah,
but I mean, I don't know if it's McGee or McGahee either. I always want to say McGahee as the way it's spelled.
We'll wait until
Willie McGahee. Hey. Yeah.
Okay. So this guy debuted in 2008. For the Cubs,
yeah,
barely played. Played for the Milwaukee Brewers for a while,
and that's where he had his best seasons.
Had like good seasons there.
Yeah, real good seasons.
Hit .285 in 2010. Solid year there. And then went over to Pittsburgh for a second. Hit .230, and then the Yankees hit .151.
Well, I think that was only a few games.
Yeah,
59 plate appearances. So yeah.
So not much.
It's a small sample size.
But I think last year he played 161 games or something with Miami. He had like 600
this
guy and something
proven.
At bats.
Yeah. And then came back for Miami for 2014, hit .287, mm-hmm. right? .287 with 76 RBIs.
Yeah, that's a good
number.
He
had four home runs, so he's not like a power guy, but he's a slap hitter guy. 177 hits, though. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's a number, man. That's a number. I think the issue here is that he strikes out a lot.
Well, he had a higher average and on-base percentage and more walks than Pablo. But like you said, he had more strikeouts as well.
He's not the contact hitter Pablo is. He is a contact hitter who doesn't – like he's not a guy who's going to cover top to bottom every part of the strike zone. He's not Pablo.
No, and he also grounded into the most double plays in the National League last year.
And he's but you know what? It's like we get another kind of semi-tubby third baseman guy. Like, I don't know. It's fine. Like, whatever. We'll deal with it. You know?
Yeah, and some people were like looking back to his
other areas.
They were looking back to his Milwaukee days when he hit, you know, 16, 18 home runs. And they're like, well, maybe. And it's like, no, ATT. Come on.
Dude,
no.
Come
not
on.
Happen.
Yeah. Really? Yeah, he's going to hit like 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. Miller Park is a bandbox. That's so easy.
Exactly.
To
exactly.
He actually did have 100 RBIs, though.
with Milwaukee. That's kind of crazy.
No, he had some great years with him. And he's a Santa Cruz native. He grew up a Giants fan. So there's a little bit of an emotional connection for him. So that's kind of cool.
So I'm looking forward to you talking to this guy, Chad, at like he'll be there, right? Like
supposedly.
If he's there, please talk to this guy.
I want to, yeah.
He's the like these are the guys we want to talk to. We want to talk to McGahee. We want to get a sense of who these new guys are. He's a big deal, I think. But I think Nori Aoki, I think that's actually the biggest signing we've had so far. Is Aoki.
Yeah, so I did a little bit of I wrote an article last week about looking at their signings this year. Not only the new signings, but the guys who assumedly, I mean, you have to make this assumption, are going to come back for full years. You know, primarily like Joe Panik, who only had a third of a year last year. Brandon Belt, who was injured for more than half the year. Obviously, Aoki and McGahee. Those four guys I kind of focused on because, you know, that's half the lineup right there. And looked at, okay, is this going to be a positive impact, potentially better than those four positions from last year? And I think right away people are like, well, with Aoki and McGahee, you're losing Pablo, you're losing Morse and the platoon of Blanco and whatever, but you still had the Morse power in there. Now it's going to be worse. Now, power, yeah, I think that's going to bear out. I think power-wise, certainly with Aoki and McGahee, who combined for five home runs last year, it's far less than what the Giants hit in those two positions last year. But average is much higher with both guys. On-base percentage is much higher with both guys. Hits were higher. Runs are a little bit lower, but that's kind of team-dependent on who's hitting behind you. And I think if they set the table, guys like Posey and Pence and others can drive them in. I think there's a potential there. I'm not saying I would rather have these two guys rather than Morse and Pablo. I would rather have Morse and Pablo. But at the same time, I don't think it's going to be as bad as some people are going to expect it to be. Power certainly going to be down. Either. But these guys are going to get on base more often overall if the history bears out of what they've done in the past. They have more speed, more stolen bases, all those things. So, you know, it could translate to an equivalent number of runs, if not, maybe not that far under what was last year. So maybe the production won't drop off too far. Then you have, of course, Brandon Belt in the mix. If he stays healthy for the full year, that's going to be a fantastic thing. Joe Panik, if he can hit, I know he hit 305. Let's not expect that. But if he hits 270.
No, he'll be like a 270, 280.
Yeah, I'm thinking 270 or something like that. You know, that's better than, you know, Brandon Hicks and Dan Uggla. And Matt King coming back potentially for a full year off of the bone spurs. You have Jake Peavy now in for a full year instead of part of a year. So I think there is a potential here, again, barring injury, that the Giants could absolutely statistically be in a better position than they were last year. But everything has to go the way they need it to go. They cannot have three or four guys, you know, succumb to injury. It just cannot happen. But I don't think it's as bad as it looks on paper initially.
All right, Eric, I want your take on Aoki, and I want your take on McGahee.
All right, I'll say this first of all. For some reason, apparently, none of my internet stuff is working, so I'm flying blind on the stat stuff. I don't know how I'm talking to you guys still. Some sort of magic.
Just on your gut instinct as a baseball guy.
No, I know, but like what's funny. You mentioned that Pablo can cover the zone anywhere, but McGahee can't. Aoki can.
Yes.
You know, and it's almost a trade-off there. It's funny because, you know, you talked about it. Fans, and I've seen fans on Twitter that are just, you know, oh, my God, you know, we didn't make any moves and this team is worse than last year and yada, yada, yada. Well, going into 2013 after 2012, we thought they were an even better team. And then because of a couple injuries, they turned into crap. I like Aoki. I really do. The more I've looked at him, the more I like him. He's the kind of guy that's going to get on base. He's going to disrupt things. He's going to help keep the line moving. And I honestly think he's going to help Brandon Crawford specifically because it'll give Crawford more opportunities at the bottom of the lineup to drive him in. He's almost like a second leadoff guy towards the end of the order. And it's not this like fake Blanco leadoff guy type crap. Mm-hmm. It's actual leadoff guy. I mean, the Giants haven't made a big signing since Barry Zito. So why the hell people are clamoring for big signings is beyond me. Me, I want everybody, yes, we're the champs. But, you know, if they don't do it, that's life. McGahee, I really have no idea what he's going to do. You know what I mean? It's the guy is good 1 year and then he's, you know, not the next. But Aoki, I like. He can cover ground. He can shift over. You know, when Pagan goes down, it'll make it easier to shuffle around the outfield.
By the way, I didn't include Pagan in my projections because I just know he's going to go down.
He's going to. It just happens every year.
He'll go down.
Yeah, Aoki, though, not only that, did you see how excited he was to become a Giant?
He wants to wrestle Mad Bum.
Yeah, he already seems like he's going to fit into this clubhouse. You know, I know he's got a translator and everything like that, but we got to figure behind the scenes, he's learned some English. He can talk to his, you know, teammates, things like that. That it's not going to, you know, really kill it. I mean, are they going to be a power team? No, but have they ever truly been a power team? No, it was an illusion last year when they went to 42-20 and Morse was hitting bombs and Brandon Hicks was hitting bombs. You know, it made it look like they were a different team than they really were, because the team that they really were is what we saw in the postseason.
That Kansas City made it to the World Series with the fewest home runs in Major League Baseball. So.
Yeah, that's the stat I keep going back to also. I mean, it's just there's a lot of ways to win baseball games. And Bruce Bochy has figured out how to plug the pieces into the right places. In Sabian, I trust.
Here's how you win baseball games. Madison Bumgarner. Question mark. Profit.
That's right.
Yeah.
You just throw
yeah, I mean, you guys make good points. I'm totally excited for Aoki. I think the guy, you know, people talked a lot of smack, like, oh my god, this guy is so bad defensively, because you watched like two times when he misplayed balls at AT&T Park in the playoffs. The guy was like an A+ defender for most of the season, like when he played for the Kansas City Royals. Like, the guy is a good defender. He's a fast guy. He's a guy who knows how to play baseball. And he's like a mini Ichiro, right? Like he's not quite Ichiro, but he's Ichiro-esque.
No, he controls the bat in the same way. He flips. Yeah. He flops.
And he puts on a good at bat. Mm-hmm. And I think watching this guy play for a full season, I think Giants fans are going to really like this guy, because we're going to watch him do that for the full season, and watching like Kruko and Kipe talk about it, is every Giants fan is going to be like, oh my god, I love this guy, look at the at bats he puts on, you know, like people are going to freaking love this kid.
Yeah. Oh yeah, wait till they show his on deck routine. They showed it during the playoffs last year.
Wait till he like almost gets hit by a pitch like that, and he like freaking jumps and does all kinds of crazy, like people are going to love this guy in San Francisco. Seriously. Well, this guy's perfect.
I have for you guys. Here's the question I have for you. Are we totally disillusioned because the Giants just won it all again? Are we sitting here trying to sell ourselves a bill of goods?
I look, it's an odd year, so no.
Okay. Here's why we're not. I don't look at the moves that were made and the team that's now about to come in as like, now we're going to defend our title and win it all again. And I don't expect that, and I don't care if it happens. Maybe we're just too optimistic because we don't expect it to happen again. Whereas maybe like our SF Giants is like, we need to win every year. That's how we survive, right? So I think you're making a valid point. Like, are we like expecting too little? Because we just don't care. Like, we're just like, we're happy, man. We're happy with the 3-3 or 3-5. Like, we're happy with 3-5. It's possible.
It is. It's totally possible. They could go out and have another tank job of a season. I mean, the Dodgers are still.
And I just go, hey man, 2016 though. We're just gonna tear it up then.
Right around the corner. They're just waiting. We're waiting to pounce.
Look, whether it is or not, we're luckier than any other fan base in Major League Baseball now. God,
it's not even close.
Yeah.
It's not even close.
And I think that a lot of people don't understand that. It's like you don't get a run like this. This doesn't just happen.
No.
And if you don't enjoy it, then what's the point? What's the point of it happening?
I think Willie just said, stop and smell the roses, people.
Yeah. Like, what's the point? Should we all just every year just be dicks to each other because we didn't sign A-Rod, whoever A-Rod might be this year? Like, whoever the current A-Rod is. Like,
plus, do we need that distraction in the clubhouse?
Yeah. You remember we did do it, though. We signed Barry Bonds. Remember that?
No.
And then we went 15 years without a friggin' title until he left, and then we won 3 and 5.
Yeah, so, literally 3 years after he left. Yeah, we won the first, and then 3 out of 5.
So, I mean, I think people put too much emphasis on, like, look at what the Angels did, right? Like, the Angels just poached all the best talent from everybody else and thought, we're going to win it all, man. We got that, and we got the Rookie of the Year. Mm-hmm. How do we not do this? Well, you ain't done it yet.
Lost in the first round.
Because you know why? Baseball doesn't work that way.
So
you don't get Michael Jordan and then suddenly win all the titles. Like, it's not – there's 9 guys.
You just mentioned that, you know, this doesn't happen to everybody. Not every fan has this opportunity. And I'm just going to jump ahead right now to talk about how ESPN ranked baseball dynasties. Now, first of all, I'm surprised.
Oh my God. Oh, okay. I can't. Okay.
First of all, I am shocked that ESPN actually called this a dynasty because, you know, we all consider it a dynasty, but, you know, we figured, whatever, East Coast bias, 3 and 5 years, that's, you know, in the era of free agency and expanded playoffs, that's not a dynasty. How could that be a dynasty? But they did acknowledge, yes, indeed, the Giants are a dynasty. Now, there were 9 teams that they ranked. Now, they did rank the Giants 7 out of 9, and we don't need to talk about, you know, necessarily if it should have been 5 or 9 or 2 or 1 or whatever. The point being, what you just said is that how many fans get to experience their team being a dynasty? Now, some of these dynasties that they listed out of these 9 are like the 1912 to 1915 White Sox, you know, the 1924 to 27 or 28 Yankees. You know, the 1945 to 48 Cardinals. So a lot of these teams are way before our time, way before our parents' time, way before our grandparents' time. So in the modern era, there are only like 2 or 3 dynasties that they even have on paper. So what we are going through right now is just so special, so amazing. It's something that may not happen to another team for another 20 years or even longer with this age of parity and expanded playoffs where anything could happen in the wild card or the first round or the second round or the third round. And it's just, it's incredible the Giants have been able to do this. And it's just something that we need to recognize. And if they don't, you know, win this year, fine, whatever. 3 out of 5, 3 out of 6, 3 out of 7, for God's sakes. It's something that we're going to treasure for the rest of our lives as fans.
It's a little scary.
We're going to talk to our kids about, you know?
It's a little scary how much I'm just, like, willing to accept anything in this offseason. It's like the euphoria of winning 3 times now. The euphoria of the first one made me hunger for the second one, right? And then the euphoria of the second one made me hunger for the third one. But now the euphoria for the third one just makes me understand that euphoria is amazing. And I should just enjoy the euphoria. Like, why shouldn't I sit back and just feel great?
Winning is a hell of a drug.
Yeah, but you always, like, hear people talk, like, athletes and everybody talk, like, we won, now we're going to do it again. Like, yeah, okay, cool, man. But guess what? Guess what the reality is? This is going to happen every year, forever.
Yeah.
So do we never get to enjoy this? Or do we have to sit around and just wait for next year? You know what? I'd rather just enjoy it. And I'd rather just, like, look back. If we never win another one, I'd rather look back and say, yeah, but we got 3 and 5, man, and that was sick. And that was sick. Like, None of those teams were supposed to win, and they all won, and it was crazy, and we never lost in the playoffs, and Tim Lincecum did this, and Michael Morris home run in the whatever, Ishikawa. Like, I'm just going to tell weird, crazy stories, and people are going to be like, you're crazy. I'm going to be like, yeah, man, but you know what? Shit was amazing, dude.
I have a feeling because, you know, my office here is decorated with, you know, the three papers I framed, all the Fathead logos, jerseys. No,
dude, that's, I got it all too, man.
World Series. I mean, yeah. I've shown some people my office and they're like, seriously, are you a teenager? Like, this is, it's embarrassing. And I'm like, I actually take that as a compliment, right? Because it's like, that's how much I care about this team. And look, if they don't win for another 20 years, this will become a bit of a trophy case, a museum to kind of remember
20 years,
the glory days.
This, and we can be like, you remember that. Right. And I imagine like fans of the Oakland A's, right, who talk about what happened in the 70s, right, where they won three in a row. Those guys, like, there's old guys now sitting on porches in Oakland talking about what happened with the A's in the 70s.
Isn't that funny?
And those guys are badasses, dude. If I ran across one of those guys and I had a beer with that guy and I said, man, tell me about the A's back then. And I guarantee his eyes would light up and he'd be like, let me tell you about the A's. Let me tell you about Vida Blue. I'd be like, all right, man, let's go. I want to hear about Vida Blue. Let's go.
That's how we're going to be. Let me tell you about this run.
Let me tell you about Bruce and Bob Garner.
Let me tell you about 10, 12, and 14, son.
Yeah, they won 34 and 14. Yeah.
Like, do you mean Gerald Posey? No, Buster Posey. Gerald Posey. Gerald Posey from the Hall of Fame? No, Buster. His name was Buster.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, it's...
I know you think Pablo's that guy that was great for the Red Sox for 10 years, but let me tell you what happened before that.
Yeah. Pablo won three titles for us. Then he went on and won seven for the Red Sox.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's funny because
good shit.
You know, Chad brought up.
Please don't win seven for the Red Sox,
yeah, Pablo. Please, right? Don't.
Well, there is no comparable dynasties, really. The closest thing is the Yankees of the late 90s.
Yeah, because
and this
they,
is a
they
dream
were in the wild card
like
era.
Every other year, Yankees? Yeah.
Right. This is a drum I've been beating for like 2 years, saying that the Giants are the new Yankees because of shit like this. Because they're able to do stuff like that. Like when the Yankees got there, they won. You know, it wasn't until 03 that they finally, you know, couldn't hang.
It's like, we didn't make the playoffs because of the Red Sox. Oh, we did. Now we win it all. Yeah, like that. That's kind of how the Giants are. It's like if we get there, we go. We go all the way. We just go all the way.
And it can't be discounted. Like they were 34 and they've been 34 and 14 over the last three postseasons.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Insane, dude. That is insane. These are against the best teams in baseball.
Yeah. They play better in the playoffs than the regular season. I mean, there's no – that's it, period.
Yeah. That's 115 win projection.
Yep.
And this – yeah, if I remember right from the article, I think it was Schoenfeld, David Schoenfeld, who wrote that one. Mm-hmm. And I think the only reason he went on to write this whole dynasty piece was when he first wrote, you know, after the Giants won it all, he said in a little poll in the corner, he said, so how many of you think this is actually a dynasty? And 84% of the people said yes. So you got to figure, you know, those are Giants fans that are just clicking yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, probably.
But, you know, so I think that's what inspired the whole, you know, dynasty talk because they are. They're a modern dynasty, and that's why we don't care about the offseason. We care, but we don't care that, you know, they didn't bring in John Lester. It's okay that they didn't get Max Scherzer. You know, it's totally okay. That none of
it did, but, yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, to me, Lester was the one I wanted more than anybody. And beyond that, you know, the Giants can patch it together. Now, I mean, you have a signing like Ryan Vogelsong coming back that is going to prove to be vital because they now have six, possibly seven starters for the rotation. I mean, it's still really six. Petit's going to stay in the bullpen. You know, and so it's not like they're heading into this without any horses.
All right, so we're all going to talk about all this, like, as we go through spring training, is like who's going to be the starter, who's going to whatever. We're going to do all that. we probably shouldn't do that right now. So instead, let's skip past that. I see that we have this in our notes. Let's move past that. We already talked about the ESPN thing. Should we talk about Pat Burrell? Pat Burrell, slip and slide.
Hey, you know what? We'll
just
put it
a
in
shout the- out to Loves for Pat the Bat, probably. Yeah.
We'll put it in our show notes, but in case anyone hasn't seen it, it's a glorious video of the machine. Well, we assume he's the machine because that's
he's
what
the machine.
He's
come
the
on.
Machine. Having a cocktail. Oh, they called it a protein shake, by the way, in the original post. And it's like, yeah, that doesn't quite look like a protein shake.
Protein shake full of alcohol.
Yeah, full of alcohol.
Vodka shake. Yeah.
It looked a little red and clear.
I don't
anyway.
Think he spilled a drop either.
No.
No, he's no, he's a professional.
So
I don't spill.
He was not the thinnest guy in the world before. He's certainly put on a few pounds since, but you can respect that being a multimillionaire, you know, ladies man that he is.
Dolly's playing football or baseball. Yeah. And now I'm a scout. I'm not watching my figure, son.
I'm just doughy as he is.
I'm banging chicks and talking about baseball.
That's right.
That's what I'm doing.
But anyway, it's just an epic video of him sliding down a slip and slide on a beach, holding his cocktail in his hand.
We'll put it in the show notes.
It's fantastic.
He drags his other hand down the sand because he's like too scared to go too fast.
Yeah, he was trying to slow himself down.
He was. I think he was too scared to go wham right into the sand at the bottom. Chase Utley was behind the camera.
So let's talk about the other thing.
I didn't know that. That was Chase Utley?
Yeah, he's the one who recorded it.
Okay, that's a bit of information I did not know. That's fantastic.
Yep. Great. All right, let's talk about the other thing, which is Michael Morris going to Miami.
Welcome to Miami.
This is sad, right? This is sad. We're sad about this,
he
right?
He didn't want to go. I mean, look.
He didn't want to go. He would stay here.
This guy was tweeting a month after the World Series with his World Series champion T-shirt on and hat on. Stuff that fans wear. He was still wearing in public. How often do you see a player do that? They do that the day they win, right? And then that's it, you know, because they're kind of obligated to.
Being a San Francisco Giant.
He loved it.
I actually came across this guy when we were doing our thing, when we were showing up for the games or whatever, and I came across this guy several times, and that was the most enthusiastic guy about baseball. A guy who did, like, he wasn't, like, you know, there's guys who, like, they play every day, right? Like, they do all the things. They hit the ball. They catch the ball. They run the ball. Morris was kind of like a guy who just hit the ball, right? But that dude was so enthusiastic about baseball. And I saw him in the locker room. He was just, like, excited to be there. He's just excited to be there, you know? And when he hit that home run, the look on his face, how he reacted when he ran it, like, to contribute after being on the shelf for so long, to come back in and hit that home run. We've talked about this on the show. It's just sad to see him go, you know?
If he was not hurt, at least not hurt as long as he was last year,
he would have had a major impact.
Well, he would have had a major impact, but they would have re-signed him despite his defense.
Yeah. No, I think so.
I think it was just a combination of his, you know, poor defense, which, you know, yeah, it was poor. It was sub-average, but it wasn't the worst we've seen.
Dude, we had Barry Bonds.
That's what I mean. We had Pat Burrell and Barry Bonds in the last couple of years. You know, it's like we've had worse.
Settle down about defense and left field. Really, everyone's got to be Blanco in left field?
Like, but, you know, it's he did miss more than 2 months of the season. He missed about a third of the season or so. And I think that was just it, and he has a history of injuries, and so they just didn't want to resign him to $6 or $8 million for a couple of years, and have the same thing happen again.
Signed for two, right? 2 years.
He signed for two with Miami. Yeah,
two was, at like $15 million.
I think it was 16, so it was eight per. Yeah,
it's crazy.
Wow, that's a pay jump. Didn't he only make like five last year?
He made six.
He made $6 million last year for us.
Yeah, 1 year six with us. So, yeah, the Giants could have easily afforded it.
Hey, man, the guy's rich, but, dude, he's so enthusiastic about baseball that I love him.
Well, he just loved him. He was just quoted as wanting to re-sign. He was wearing all the Giants swag. He had the trophy in his house. Well, I guess it was a fake trophy. But point being, he was proud to be a Giant, and he was so happy to win.
And guess what happened?
With the Giants.
He was proud to be a Giant, and then he got to do like the thing that he came here for.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, when he came here, he was like, I want to win a championship, right? He fucking won a championship. Are you serious? Like, you got to do that? You came here? Like, there's about four or five guys now who came to the Giants last season. You got, like, Tim Hudson. You got Michael Morris. You got...
You could throw Peavy in there even after the trade.
Peavy the trade.
Sure. You got a lot of guys who came and were like, I came here to win a championship. And they did.
Yep.
Well, if I read correctly, Morris is married, I believe, right?
Yeah. He's
right. And I wouldn't be surprised if she's from there because he's from.
They're really actually – they're like the happiest couple of all time.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
If you watch Instagrams and all that kind of shit, yeah.
Yeah, and that's their home, you know what I mean? That's where he grew up. He's a Florida
boy. Yeah, he's a Miami guy, yeah.
And he really is. You look at his like social stuff like you're talking about, and he's like, you know, he's playing up the thrill to be playing in, I don't know the area code down there. You know, I'm thrilled to be playing.
Him and Pence were like best buds, though. And like, I'll guarantee you this. I'll guarantee you that Morris went to the Giants and said, I want to be back. What's your offer? And they were like, not much.
Yeah.
do we know if they even made an offer?
I don't think there was an offer. We don't know that.
Yeah.
We don't know that for sure.
I guarantee you that Morris wanted his agent to talk to the Giants and ask at least what it was. There was no formal offer, but I guarantee you an offer was made, and the offer was shit.
Yeah.
Because the Giants looked at left field and said, left field is not going to be filled with Michael Morris next year. And so we'll give him like a, you know, courtesy offer to make him feel good, but no. And then he can go to somewhere else. And Miami goes, hey, how about, you know?
How about being our fourth outfielder?
Ton of money all the time. Yeah.
He's not even starting outfielder there.
Yeah, he's not. He's off the bench, but he can come. He can do DH. He can do all.
Well, it won't be much DH, but you know, he's first base outfielder, just like the Giants. It's just the Giants didn't have a spot for him. They weren't willing to offer him that spot.
If we didn't have Brandon Belt, like if Brandon Belt wasn't like, you know, if we were in the years where like our first baseman was in, we didn't know, Michael Morris would be our first baseman right now.
Probably, yeah.
Because that guy was sick. And he played a good first baseman.
Well, he was fine at first. He's better at first than left field. Put it that
and he
way.
Hit, that home run he hit, I'll never forget that, man.
Yeah, but can you think of another player that came for just 1 year and had as big of an impact on us as Michael Morris? I can't think of a guy. But Scooterell, we had hopes that he would do stuff.
Technically, yeah, it wasn't 1 year.
He signed, but he never did anything else.
David Bell, 2003.
Bell. Yeah, yeah,
wow,
Bell.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's
a very wait, hold on.
beep beep, click 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 click.
Wait. center fielder, 2002. Shit. What? Why am I spacing?
Center fielder in 02. Well, it wasn't Reggie Sanders.
No,
but he was on that club.
2002. Oh my God, Giants.
Who the hell was the center fielder in 02? Kenny Lofton.
Kenny Lofton.
Oh, yeah, Kenny Lofton.
Kenny Lofton.
He was on the 02 series. Yeah. Kenny Lofton was a free agent.
We actually had a lot of one-year guys, to be quite honest.
I just can't remember loving a guy as much as we love Morris. And I love
him so much.
There'll be such a hole, and it's just a hole
I'll love him forever. Whenever I see him play anytime ever, I'm going to love that guy because I saw the pure joy of playing baseball that he had. I saw it.
You know what's so funny is that because I didn't know much about the guy, I knew his stats and knew where he played and knew the name and all that stuff. But
I never gave a shit when he played for like Washington. I was like, yeah, it's that guy.
Whatever. It's Michael Morris. Wait, it's like, you know, Nick Markakis. I don't know him.
Yeah, fuck you, Nick Markakis. Yeah. Fuck you.
When Ben and I interviewed him, he just had the most infectious personality, and he was so genuine and so excited to be there and answer our questions at the end of the day. And I'm like, man, you're almost too excited to answer our questions, you know? And
yeah, what's wrong with you?
Yeah,
it's why do you talk to us so bad?
This is weird that he's like so like, ask me more. Yeah, and then of course it went into the season realizing that's who he is. He is that guy. He is that enthusiastic about the pretending. Sport.
Yeah.
No, he was not pretending at all. He wasn't just putting it up for media day because, you know, you were there, you know, with Buster and he was like, and then Timmy was like,
Yeah, it's like it's annoying to be there.
Yeah, they don't want to be there. But, you know, Brandon Belt, like when we interviewed him, it was just you and me and Brandon when they were shutting down. He was so eager to answer our questions.
They're all super eager when they're young. And yeah. Oh, shit. Now I've done this a bunch of times.
Yeah. Some of these other guys, whatever. Yeah, get a new haircut. You
know, he's done a bunch of those and he's still like that. Yeah. Like, you know that he's done a bunch of those.
Yeah, I remember after Media Day last year. I seem to remember Chad, you coming away just so unbelievably impressed by the guy.
Oh, he was my favorite interview at the time.
No, I remember too. I remember you were like telling me, you were like, Morse is the guy. Morse is the new guy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, I'm in. I'll dig it. But I didn't realize that he was also going to like hit a pivotal home run.
Yeah, right.
It's like, yeah, sure, man. Yeah, he's the guy, whatever. Yeah. But that home run he hit was insane. That shit was insane. I went crazier for that home run than I did for any other home run in the playoffs. Like, even like Ishikawa. Like, even Ishikawa, you know? Like, Ishikawa's home run, that might be the most insane home run in the history of the San Francisco Giants. Like, because it led to a championship. The shot heard around the world was, like, we talk about that. None of us were there for that, right?
Yeah.
All right.
We talk about that like it's some insane thing. None of us were there. Ishikawa is our shot heard around the world, right?
Always, yeah, that's the way it's felt.
But I think that Morse was my shot heard around the world. Like, I really do. I feel like that was the one where I was like, oh my God. Like, I went crazy for that.
Yeah, I went crazy on a YouTube binge 3 nights ago. Maybe it's Friday night. I went kind of backwards in order. I watched not the entire World Series game 7. I watched the first couple innings just to remember how Hudson struggled. I fast-forwarded to the panic double play, you know, when Affelt was in, when Bumgarner came in, and then, of course, you know, the ninth inning. And Michael Morse's hit that put him ahead. Then I went back to
the shit, yeah, and Michael Morse had the hit to win us the goddamn World Series.
Well, he had two out of the three RBI in that game. He had a sac fly, and then he had the game-winning RBI. So he had two RBIs that game.
Now I'm really upset that he's not coming back.
I know, right? Sorry. And then the NLCS, same thing. You know, it was like I basically fast-forwarded to Michael Morse's home run and then Ishii's home run and then went back beyond that. But, yeah, it was just a lot of fun to go back through the whole thing. And Michael Morse was just totally involved in the World Series and the NLCS, just completely pivotal. If it wasn't for him, you know, and you can say this for other guys too. Of
course, you know,
Mad Bum.
You know who else?
But you know,
Brandon Crawford
with the grand slam. Like, I did that
all
one too.
The shit.
But I mean, it's just one of those things where he was absolutely in the thick of it, even though he was only in half the series. But we're gonna miss the guy. You know, it sucks. Yeah, but
we are.
You know,
who's a guy like that come off your bench?
Who's to say Aoki in the playoffs couldn't, you know, slap a double down the line that ties the game?
Well, we saw him. But actually, in the World Series, he had an amazing at-bat in the World Series.
So.
But that was a game that we won 12-4, but whatever.
True debt.
All right, so let's finish this off.
Yeah, let's finish it up.
We got to finish it up. All right, so Media Day. Chad, you will be there. I will not.
Yeah, that's too bad that you're not going to be there, but it looks like Ben can make it, so it'll be me and Ben.
You got the Ben.
Yeah.
The Ben Kenobi in the house.
He was able to get his shift covered, so he's going to be joining me at Media Day is Friday, February 6th. So I've been tweeting out, you know, the last couple of days on Twitter and
I know Facebook. That Jen and Allie will be there. So
I assume they would be. Yeah,
hit them up.
And, you know, if anyone out there is listening to this and if you have any particular specific questions for any of the, you know, your favorite players, go ahead and tweet us or post it on our Facebook page or email us at torturecast@gmail.com. And as long as it's not too inappropriate, we'll see what we can do because the
shouldn't ask about Buster Posey's balls.
Probably should avoid that. You know, do you deflate your baseballs?
Yeah, I was gonna say, who's gonna ask the question now? Do you know the baseballs are properly inflated?
Exactly. Are they sewn tight? you know, but the last couple of years, I've brought my you know, nice little DSLR camera and mic, and you know, it's not professional quality, but they're pretty nice little video interviews.
Are we all going to spring training this year or what?
That's one thing. We need to do this at one point as a crew to go down there because there's no doubt we'll be given access.
I'm going. I'll go.
Giants Pod has, you know, gone, well, I guess only once or twice, but they had full and complete access. Up with Pavlovic, you know.
Let's go.
It's great. So I'd love to. I know that.
Let's go.
Jen's going in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, we should talk offline and see if we can make it happen. But anyway, we're going to be there next Friday, so you know, look for those interviews. Going to be posted on YouTube and the site shortly thereafter. FanFest is Saturday, February 7th. I don't think anyone from TortureCast is going to be there. You're going to be out of town. I can't make it. Obviously, you're in Florida, Eric, and I think Ben's working.
I'm just sitting here all depressed right now.
Because in the past, of course, we've been able to hook up with fans or listeners or whatever.
Wait, Chad, you're going on Media Day, though, right?
Media Day is Friday, yes.
Okay, but you're not going on...
Not on FanFest, which is Saturday. Okay. Yeah, right. That's where, you know, 50,000 people packed the stadium, and you basically can't see or do anything there. Well, sorry, Giants, for bursting your bubble there. But
yeah, but that's not really that great anyway. That day is... Yeah, that day's for fans. It's not for media.
No, exactly. That's what I mean. So we won't be there. But, you know, look for those interviews soon. Hopefully, Ben and I will split up and get some good nuggets.
Is there, Chad, I got to ask, is there anyone in particular you're really looking forward to talking to this year?
Well, here, Aoki, man.
I was going to say, Aoki's going to be a little difficult with the whole translator thing.
There's going to be a shit ton of Japanese people around Aoki. It's going to be
It's going to be rough the entire year.
You should jump in there and just be like, let me buy you all sake. Let's go.
Sake bombs.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I actually thought about that, Willie. Is, you know, usually the press box is not too bad. But I think with Aoki on the team this year, there's going to be a lot more Japanese media in that.
It's going to be tough, dude. It's going to be tough.
It's going to take up a lot of seats. Yeah. So, yeah. But it is what it is. No, I really want to talk to McGahee, talk a little bit about Santa Cruz, some kind of like personal questions like that, not just the standard ones that everyone's going to ask him. Certainly do want to talk to some of the veterans about you know, their third ring or second ring. And I have a whole list of questions that I got. So looking forward to it. I mean, I just remember this. I've done it twice. Willie, you and I went the year after they won their second World Series.
That's right.
And pretty much everyone was in a fantastic mood.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, yeah, we won a World Series.
They're going to be in a fantastic mood, man. Yeah, just go.
Last year, when I went with Ben, it wasn't that people were in bad moods. It just wasn't the same. It was like, what happened last year? Why wasn't it a good year? Blah, blah, blah.
Don't ask about that. Yeah.
This year, it's going to be just like 2 years ago. It's going to be like, yeah, we won again. Yeah, ask me about that. So...
You're going to kill it, buddy. You're going to kill it.
It's going to be fun. So I also want to say that the World Series trophies are on tour. I'm sure most Giants fans know about that. We'll post the link in the forums. I personally am going in a couple of weeks. It's going to be in my little hometown of Gilroy, so I'll be able to line up. I have a picture of me and my daughter with the first trophy, then my family with the twins, and then it'll be me and my family with the triplets in a couple of weeks. So I'll complete the trifecta, which is fantastic. So... have you done that, Willie? Have you gotten a picture in front of the trophies there?
Not the triples, no.
No. The tribbles? What? It's like it's the tribbles. It's like Star Trek now.
Nah, there's three of them now. Yeah,
I know it's gonna be. So
I have cool. the. I have the. I, want to touch I have the duos, but not the trio.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where it's gonna be even after the season starts and the trophy tour is over. They always have them at the park.
Yeah,
and in fact, I remember in 2013, we even though we got the picture with the family and everything like that. So how many games did I go to? And it was just like the two were just standing there in the corner and there's no line. There's like three Giants employees and they're just waiting for people to come and take pictures. So they're going to be there probably most of the year. So if anyone misses out on the
trophy tour, you just have to have the tickets to the little upper deck thing, like that little mid deck area.
Not even that. Anyone can go there because it's out on the plaza. It's not even on the club level. So I think anyone can
really? Because they had it on the plaza like that.
Maybe one time, but now I've been able to access it anytime. And then catchers and pitchers are reporting on February 18th. So that's only, what, 16 days from now? So you could smell the cut grass almost. It's coming, guys. It's coming.
Finally.
It is coming. Oh, man.
I'm not sitting here tossing a baseball in the air or anything.
That's awesome.
One that Angel Pagan hit, but yeah.
Oh. Is that from when...
spring training last year.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's the first ball I've ever gotten in my life. I'm 35.
Yeah.
That works, dude.
Yeah, it is. One time I went to the bathroom as a kid and I missed a Howard Johnson home run into the Wrigley bleachers that went right to my seat. Yeah. But I think I was happy to wait for Angel Pagan instead of getting a Howard Johnson ball.
Yeah, I got my hands.
I still don't have one. I still don't have one.
I got my hands on a Barry Bonds foul ball. And you know how they say things come in bunches? I'd never had one in my entire life. And one game at Candlestick in 95 or 94. Foul ball by Barry Bonds. I was about 10 rows behind the home plate. Reached over, touched my hand. I didn't get it. Really upset. Very next batter, Glenn Allen Hill, hits one exactly the same. Big pop fly, foul ball, comes right down and I catch it. Basically in the same area. So it was just kind of funny. It's like, never even touched a ball and then two batters in a row are hit to me. So. Yeah.
Baseball guys are like, you don't deserve a Barry Bonds.
Yeah. They're like, nope.
You get a Glenn Allen Hill.
Yeah, you know, the kid in front of me got the Barry Bonds, so it is what it is. It's all good.
All right, that's gonna do it for this episode of the Torture Cast, episode 79. We're gonna see you guys for episode 80. Holy shit. That's the Jerry Rice episode, everybody.
There you go.
Just moving on to football references now. I can't wait until that happens. And there's baseball imminently around the corner. It's crazy. I'm so excited. Everyone's so excited. So thank you, everybody, for listening to the Torture Cast, episode 79. The hot stove, everything, whatever. Who gives a fuck? Hot stove or not. Off-season spectacular. My name is Willie Dills for Eric Nathanson and Chad Kang. We'll see you guys next time. Boom!
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.